It really is great to be here, and I don't think it'd be such a bad deal to stay in Scotts Bluff. You live in great country. I don't know how this was for Dave, but this was a very difficult assignment for me, and so I asked for some help, and I asked Don if he could help me with this project, and so he dropped by one day, and he said, "I've got a list of some of the decisions," and it was like that, and the trouble was it was all negative decisions, as he mentioned, and so I went home and I said, "Jane, I'm really struggling with this, and I really need some help." And she said, "Well, Barry, I'll be glad to help you, and I'll just take a couple minutes and jot a few things down." And this was her list. So, and they were all negative decisions, and it even gets worse because the lists don't match. I couldn't even call the list down to match. So I thought, well, now I got to turn to somebody who can really help me on some good decisions, and I thought, well, I thought of my mother, but she passed away quite a while ago, so that wasn't going to help. So I wrote to my brother Roger, and I said, "Raj, can you help me with some of the best decisions I've made ranching?" And he said, "Well, yeah, I'd love to help you." And I got a letter in the mail, and there's a list on a post-it note like that. So as Dave, I don't know if you went through this, Dave, but this has been a tough deal. I was blessed with the opportunity, and in retrospect, an absolutely unbelievable opportunity to live and manage a ranch south of Mission, South Dakota, as Don said. North Valentine, tremendous community and great ranch country. And that ranch was put together by my grandfather, and much like Dave's was. And he was, has been, and continues to be, probably grows in my life as just a giant of a man, and probably the most significant individual in my life. He was a very, very successful rancher. His name was Claude Lamoureux. He was very, very successful. He was a cowboy and an Indian, and to a little boy, that was a pretty neat deal. So the best horse I've ever seen is that buckskin horse that he rode and that I trailed along on some, old nag trying to catch up to Grandpa. And I spent a lot of my life trying to catch up to Grandpa. And as I mentioned in my piece, Dave called it my dissertation, and some might think that it was I wrote it after I came out of a counseling session with a psychiatrist, maybe, but I made a fundamental mistake when I went back to that ranch. My granddad had been dead 6 years, and I made a mistake in hanging his picture, that picture, in a very prominent place in our house. And it was out of respect for him that I did that in love, but it really did trap me into some behaviors that I think led to the two worst decisions that I've made. And you got to understand that the ranch that I managed for those years was built on the backs of some tremendous white-faced cows, and I was in love with those cows. Somebody said that that talking to a Hereford breeder is like talking to an alcoholic. They just they just love those cows so much. And I do. I mean, I've never been an alcoholic, but if that's what it looks like, I'm guilty. I love those cows. And so I can tell you how great they are and how fertile they are and how hardy they are and everything else. But the ranch, those cows, the marketing system that my grandfather put into place was to sell fall yearlings and yearlings. We had a fall cow herd and a spring cow herd. And that gave, my grandfather ran about 40% of his carrying capacity, as I look back, as yearlings. And so we continued to do that. When he passed away, the family decided that we'd adopt a principle of management that we would change nothing on the ranch. It was good enough for Grandpa, it was good enough for us. And so we kept those Hereford cows and we ran a straight bred herd of cows. And it has nothing to do with the cows, but the worst decision we made, that I made, was to stay with straight bred cows. And I did that, I think, because I was getting, number one, I was trying to validate the experience that I had growing up on that ranch, and I was really fighting the marketplace. Those were great yearling cattle, and we fed those cattle way back in the 1970s at with Dallas Horton down in Colorado, and there's some performance information for you on our cow herd from back in 1979. I got home and started keeping records, and you know, we had a 96% calf crop or preg percent on the cows that sired these calves. We, as I said, we ran yearlings. They weighed 941 pounds, and that was after 2% shrink in Valentine on trucks. We fed those cattle out. They weighed 1286, and I know the grading system's changed a little bit since way back in 19. I think we went through one grade change, but 66% of those cattle graded choice, and they were all twos and threes. Well, they were very acceptable in the market. If you didn't look at the color of the hide, those cattle would be very acceptable and probably very profitable cattle today. The trouble was, those cattle lost. Dallas Horton had bought those cattle, and he lost a ton of money on those cattle. The 79-80 market was a brutal market, and he didn't come back. And the tragedy was of those cattle was that nobody came back to buy those cattle. They were considered that they put too much bark on, too much fat on, and they were slow gaining. And no matter how much data I could provide buyers, I couldn't convince them to buy those cattle without a significant market discount of $5 to $10 a hundred. And that was, but, you know, I knew I was right. I knew they were the best cattle in the whole wide world because I'd bought the bulls or my granddad had bought the bulls. And so I just kept fighting that marketplace. So the worst decision I made, in my opinion, after all, in looking back, was to not take advantage of maternal heterosis in the cow herd. It is an extremely powerful tool, and if you look at high leverage points in the cattle industry, taking advantage of maternal heterosis is, in my opinion, one of the very top high leverage points. And it's for several reasons why that's the case. Those cows have tremendous longevity. So why was that such a bad decision? Well, as I mentioned, we sold cattle. All the pounds we sold at a discount. We didn't sell hundreds of thousands of pounds, and that's an amazing thing. I was talking to Jim Gosey about this, in that you think about the incremental advantages of heterosis, and people seldom think about the collective advantage of heterosis. Well, collectively, over many years, we did not take advantage of selling hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds of cattle. We ignored the advantages of that crossbred cow, that baldy cow, for example, that Dave was talking about, because of we ignored the advantages of longevity, of calf vigor, of survivability, and of market acceptability. And one of the reasons why we didn't change is exactly what I saw happening with my neighbors, is what Dave brought up, is that I couldn't figure out a replacement system for the cow herd, and I was convinced that I was raising the best cows in the whole wide world, and I couldn't buy any as good, and all blah blah blah, you know, and I was really trapped in that mindset, and I ignored all those advantages. And the other thing is, I was trapped in a paradigm that I could use selection as a tool for change, and I ignored the simple, right in my face solution, and that was to use breeding systems, which are, you can use very rapidly and are very powerful, and they're very simple, and rather than trying to use selection. Breeding systems will solve most problems using complementarity much, much faster than selection will, especially in a species like cattle. Well, I just put down an example, and on the impact, and you go on down the list, BBD, you name it, we've done it. I've haven't done the cedars, and I kind of had some other interests in the last couple of years, so I've probably reared back on some of my adaptation of technology. And But that had, I did that, especially in the early 1980s, I think totally inappropriately. And it wasn't the technology's fault. The technology is presented as an opportunity. And it was my almost blind adoption of technology. You know, at one point in time, I was feeding, I was not only double ear tagging calves with fly tags, I was also feeding fly control mineral and using a purge dewormer. I mean, it was just like, how many worms were in those cows? Or flies or whatever. Well, I didn't understand some very basic business principles. And that is that there are limits. And there were certainly limits in the carrying capacity of that ranch. And there are biological limits of growth of any animal, especially with heritabilities of 30% for those growth traits that Dr. Gosi showed the other day. I mean, it why it took me so long to figure out that the 5-pound advantage of this product and the 5-10-pound for that product, and I added up all those advantages, I would have been weaning 1,000-pound calves, Dave. And I, you know, there's a biological limit to what that country can do because, back to the heritability, because most of the expression of the calf is for his phenotypic expression is being limited by the environment in which we raise them. The other thing is I didn't really understand the point of diminishing returns. So if I thought one thing was good, like my deworming example, I'd do two things. You know, I didn't understand those thresholds and those points of appropriate behavior. And another reason why I did that, I think, because I didn't understand high leverage points. As I ignored crossbreeding, which was the most powerful tool I could have used, I tried to almost, tried to make up for that with the application of lots and lots of technology. There was at a point in time in the early 1980s when I had every cow on that ranch individual ID'd. I had every calf tattooed and individually tagged. I had records on every calf that had been sick. And so as we sold cattle, I could have met the cool requirements that we're talking about. And that was 20-some years ago. And the reality was the marketplace wasn't ready for me, or, you know, I was really out of tune because nobody was paying. Green tag programs were collapsing. Nobody was willing to pay for what I was doing. And I didn't understand, I really honestly didn't understand the barriers in the marketplace. The marketplace is always right. And no matter how much I love those white-faced cattle, there were problems with those cattle at the time, and I couldn't change them. Certainly, I couldn't change them fast enough with selection. The other thing was I don't think I understood the interrelationships of that ranch and the pounds weaned per cow exposed versus the cost of early calving, for example. Since I couldn't get those, you know, I was faced with those challenges, and I wanted to increase weaning weight, and I did that with age. I moved calving up into the year, and I certainly increased weaning weight, but I didn't understand the associated cost with making that decision. Well, Acock would call what I think I was doing in the 80s in terms of technology preactive planning. I was looking ahead. I really thought that the cattle, that we should have individual identification of cattle. I should communicate that to the buyer of my cattle. There was early information coming back that pre-weaning vaccinations and shots and working those cattle should be valuable to the industry, and so I was doing that. I was trying to jump out in front of the industry, and I think that graph of that, if you look at that, it's also in the Red Book. If you want to study it when you get home, I was reaching out in front, setting some goals to a target that really wasn't there yet. Now the I just wait on the best one. What's really fascinating to me is that at the same time as I was hung up on reactive planning on one hand, I was trying to jump ahead on the other, and I think that's called schizophrenia. Is that it really didn't make a lot of sense, and so now we'll get to the good news. Now I'm still raising cattle today. And I'm not still in the cattle business because I didn't make a few good decisions. And I have made some good decisions, and I'll deal with those. And I'll tell you what, though, the best decisions I've made with collaboration with, as the young man was talking about, the team that he and Connie had put together, and Ivan, the best decisions I've made, I've certainly made collaboratively with a team that included my brother Roger and Don Boggs and others. The best decision I made was to differentiate the L7 Ranch in the marketplace. That is a great logo. The L7 brand is a great brand, and I traced the brand back, and my great grandfather got that brand about 100 years ago, and it was owned by one of the big cattle companies that had come to the reservations in the 1880s, and I'm not sure how my great grandfather got that brand, and I'm not going to tell you the stories I've heard how. So. I don't want to wreck my reputation. So, what I did with that brand was has helped me in many, many, many different ways. What I did was I took the cattle that we'd been breeding and using I used strict selection criteria for maternal traits, both on that Hereford side and on the Angus side, and I was crossbreeding to generate F1s. And so I was generating some very powerful young females, and I sold those, and my family sold those into special sales. And this was I created an ad. I did that myself, and I ran that ad as many places I could, you know, that about $1,500 would buy. And $1,500 sounds like a lot of money to advertise your cattle, but it really paid off. I had a call. In the year 2000, I had a call from a guy in Minnesota who had traced back those cattle. Talk about trace back. He had a bunch of these L7 black baldy cows. He didn't know where they'd come from because they'd been through this whole cattle system that we have. But he traced it back through the brand that was on their left side and called me up in Brookings and said he wanted to buy more of them. He just loved those cows. So just getting our name out, getting our ad out, differentiating ourselves in the marketplace with black baldies, which, Dave, by the early 1990s, had kind of run out because people had crossed up the cattle so much. We captured a very, very good market when we did that. We received market premiums, tremendous market premiums. In 1992, we sold 575-pound black baldy heifers for $1.25 at the Burwell sale barn. And Gene Cohn says that that's still the highest-priced cattle he's ever sold. And so we got, and I'll tell you the truth, they were overpriced. And they're good, but they weren't that good. It improved the marketing for the rest of our cattle. The rest of the cattle we sold carried with it that reputation. It improved the image of our family and our ranch, and you could see it in family relations, and I know how powerful those are, as Dave explained, and we started getting along better when we felt better about what we were doing, and it was a very, very powerful tool. Now, to differentiate yourself in a commodity business is not a very difficult, is a very difficult thing to do, and so we looked around and found, and I just, you know, locked in on the brand and tried to do that. The second best decision that I made really rather recently was to move calving from that March period to the beginning of May. And again, why it took me so long to figure this deal out is almost embarrassing. But what it did for the operation that my wife and I have in Brookings, South Dakota, was it reduced weather-associated risk. I have a full-time job, and I checked the cows, you know, I'm teaching, so I checked them in the morning. I just didn't have time to deal with any problems. The farm that we have, James' family homesteaded in 1878, and I think some of the original buildings are still on the place, and so the facilities aren't very good, and so it helped a lot that way. So it reduced labor just tremendously. We calve in a large pasture of intermediate wheatgrass and have very little problems, and, and absolutely no scours. I had one calf with C&D, which I thought I'd leave in the sandy country of north of Mission, but it followed me to Brookings. And it dramatically reduced our harvested feed cost. And it did reduce weaning weight, as you would expect, because the calves were much younger. But in terms of pounds weaned per cow exposed, it was actually not dramatically impacted, because we've actually weaned several calf crops over 100% because of twins. It isn't that we didn't lose a couple calves, but we did. But we've dramatically improved calf survivability, which has translated into really no difference in pounds weaned per cow exposed. Now, I want to make this very, very clear, that the reason I could do that with confidence is that I based that decision on the results of the work of Dr. Adams and Dr. Clark and his crew down at the University of Nebraska, and at the really great work that Dr. Dick Pruitt has done at South Dakota State University at the Cottonwood Station. And so I kind of waited till that work was summarized, and I felt very confident that it was in the results, and I am very confident in the results, and so I made that change. I made the change based on unbiased and really well-done work at two very fine stations, experiment stations. In Acoff's work, Acoff would describe, I think, my best decisions is that I was interactive. I was focused on the time period that, you know, I didn't have much labor to contribute to the business, so I better get labor out of my system. And so I was engaged right in the present. And same with those selling baldy heifers. I was engaged. The market was rewarding those kind of cattle, and I took advantage of that. I will tell you that my grandfather was very, very innovative. And as I was writing that up, the innovations that I wrote down, and I didn't really, you know, I read what I wrote after it got published, and it jumped out at me, that the innovations that I remember him working on were on haying systems. And he was trying to reduce the cost of purchase or of raised feed. This was in the 1960s when I was a boy, And I really think I misinterpreted his innovation, or at least I misapplied that principle. He was right on target. He was right on target for his marketing of those white-faced cattle, which at the time that the 40s and 50s and 60s, were not discounted in the marketplace. And his innovations were directed at reducing harvested feed costs. And I really think it took me a while to figure out that my grandfather acted exactly as Acoff would have wanted us to. And so I think my grandfather's actually grown a little bigger in my mind. And if this isn't the title of a country western song, it should be. Is it any wonder? Is it any wonder, as I thought about this, is it any wonder that the two worst decisions that I made were based on tradition, based on anecdotal information, and the seat of my saddle? And is it any wonder that the very best decisions that I made were based on sound business principles like differentiation and points of diminishing return, research-based information by very fine scientists, and the principles of integrated resource management, which I started adopting in the late 1980s, that record-keeping really was a powerful tool to help me make decisions? Is it any wonder? Not at all. So with that, thanks very much. It's been great to be with you this week, and I told my best friend Roger Gase back there, I'm not leaving, I'm just moving. So hope to see you again.